Well, winter doesn't just mean freezing temperatures. It's also a time when a lot of us are likely to get sick. And that kind of leads to my next question. Do you vaccinate your children? It seems for more and more Michigan parents, the answer is no. When it comes to children not being vaccinated because their parents claim some personal or religious exemption, Michigan is number four in the nation. But resistance to vaccinations didn't just start with Jenny McCarthy or that study by British Dr. Andrew Wakefield that alleged a link between vaccines and autism, a study, by the way, that has since been discredited as being based on faulty science. But it goes back long before that. Gender and medical historian Jacqueline Antonovich has studied and written about the history of our complicated relationship with vaccinations. Now, Jacqueline, you recently wrote in the blog nursingcleo.org about this topic, and it was pretty personal for you. You got clobbered with whooping cough?
I did, actually. It was quite ironic, I found, someone who studies sort of these historic diseases to actually come down with what I called an Oregon Trail disease, if you're familiar with that childhood game. Yeah.
And there you were. And this is not something to take lightly. I guess it isn't just lying around and coughing.
No, actually, it was quite severe. I was on five different medications. I bruised a rib. I strained some muscles in my neck. And I was actually quarantined by my doctor for a few days. So it's not pleasant. And actually, my husband also came down with it for a few days.
Wonderful. So. Well, you pose a very good question in the piece that you wrote for nursingcleo.org, and that is, how did a disease that was basically wiped out in the 1970s wind up infecting you and your husband in 2014?
Well, it's a very complicated question, and as you alluded to, I think a lot of this sort of current trend or resurgence that we're seeing in whooping cough is a combination of the study from Andrew Wakefield that really sort of prompted suspicion about all vaccines, not just the MMR vaccine that he was looking at. But also pertussis, the vaccine wears off over time. So it's not as effective. You know, you need to get a booster if you haven't had one in a few years, which was the case for me. It's a good idea to go in and speak with your doctor and get one, especially if you're pregnant. They're recommending now to get one if you're pregnant.
But what we're seeing and looking at incidents around the country is there's an increase. And why? How much of that do you think is behind people choosing to say no to vaccines?
Well, I think that is a significant factor in the increase in vaccines. We can see all over the country, as you mentioned, there's some pretty scary statistics for parents not vaccinating their children. In California, Colorado, and unfortunately in Michigan as well, in Washington, we're seeing some really scary numbers that are affecting what public health officials call herd immunity.
And talk about the importance of that, because it is important for those who are getting their kids vaccinated or getting their vaccines themselves as they go through life to understand that they can be impacted by those who choose to not do it.
Absolutely. So it's not just about protecting yourself and protecting your family. It's really about protecting the community. And so herd immunity is a term that public health officials use. And what it means is when a critical portion of the community is immunized against a contagious disease, most members of the community are protected against the disease because there's little opportunity for an outbreak. And even those who are not eligible for certain vaccines, like infants, the elderly, pregnant women, or even immunocompromised individuals, they're also protected because the disease is minimized. And the required percentage of vaccinations to ensure herd immunity, it varies by disease. But for pertussis, a disease that Michigan has been grappling with, it's between 93% and 95%. So even if a small number of children aren't vaccinated, it can lower the level for herd immunity that's needed.
And so knowing that Michigan is fourth in the nation in parents choosing to say no to vaccines, can we track that with that study from Wakefield? Did that resistance kind of take root and start resurging at that study and then Jenny McCarthy piling in with her book and her story?
Right. Yeah. I think we actually can. And, you know, Wakefield's finding, as you mentioned, really caught attention of these autism advocacy groups and Jenny McCarthy. But I think the popularity stems from the fact that, you know, with autism, it offers a tangible explanation for like this really complex issue of autism. And I think planting that seed of doubt really sort of influenced a lot of parents to sort of be skeptical of all vaccinations. But to be fair, a lot of parents are just concerned about the amount of vaccines that their children are getting, not just the MMR vaccine. And it can be pretty scary for new parents when they find out just how many vaccines their children are supposed to get. And I would add that sort of in an age where public health campaigns really stress patient advocacy, it's understandable that parents want to be strong advocates for their children. In this case, however, the advocacy is based on flawed science. So
parents are feeling either they do believe there's some dark side to vaccines or they don't want to put their children through so many vaccines. Is there something even deeper? Does this distrust of vaccinations reflect other issues of distrust, for example, distrust in the government?
Well, absolutely. And as a historian, this is actually a question that I'm really interested in. And suspicions of vaccines are nothing new. Our country has a long history of anti-vaccination and anti-inoculation campaigns that we can actually trace back to colonial America. In 1721, for example, there was a terrible smallpox epidemic in Boston where 844 people died. But the famous Reverend Cotton Mather, whom you may have heard of or learned about in school, he was this huge advocate for smallpox inoculation, which is really different than a modern-day vaccination. But many other people in the Boston community, including physicians, disagreed with Mather, and they feared that the inoculations would actually spread the disease and kill more people. And actually, the controversy was so intense that at one point, an anti-inoculation protester threw a lighted bomb through the window of Cotton Mather's house. So this debate has always been really intense. And much later, in the first decade of the 20th century, a lot of anxiety and uncertainty existed surrounding the advent of germ theory, new scientific medicine, and the subsequent vaccinations that came along with that.
And at the same time, you had the flu epidemic that raged around the world.
Absolutely. And so much of this concern had to do with the safety, but also, as you mentioned, a lot of the debate centered on suspicions surrounding compulsory vaccination laws. Much of the debate centered on individual rights versus a public good. Does the state have the right to penalize you if you refuse a vaccination? And in 1905, the Supreme Court decided in Jacobson v. Math that in Massachusetts' case, the state actually could enact compulsory laws.
So the greater good outweighs my right to say you can't make me have a vaccination.
Right. In the case of a disease like smallpox, yes. And certainly diseases like, you know, HPV and all that are completely different cases and don't apply to that particular case. But I will add that throughout the 20th century, there have been many anti-vaccination groups. And actually, like the current crop, they've often used media and popular culture to advocate for their cause. They've circulated their ideas through posters, newspapers, and even songs. There's actually an anti-vaccination hymn out there.
I'm talking with gender and medicine historian Jacqueline Antonovich, who's been studying the history of our relationship with vaccinations. And Jackie, I grew up in the 1950s. I remember being taken to the local school, being given a little paper cup with a sugar cube with that sock polio vaccine. I remember being intensely relieved that it wasn't a shot. I remember as a little child.
Right.
I dare say my parents and others were absolutely thrilled to have something that would liberate them from the worry of their kids contracting polio. It was such a specter in the first half of the 20th century, and now we don't think about it. Has there been a sense that almost vaccines have worked too well to eradicate disease, so people feel, well, I don't need to have my child vaccinated? Is it almost like a victim of its own success?
Absolutely. I actually think that this latest anti-vaccination, sort of the safety that we feel, is sort of an ignorance of our own past. We sort of forget, you know, how devastating polio was. And polio was actually really sort of catalyzed people to really support vaccinations because now it wasn't just the sick or the elderly. It was your children that were that were being affected by polio.
You could go to the lake for a summer outing and then a week later you have a child with polio.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. And so I think
or a president in the case of FDR.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think vaccines have done their job so well that most parents today are really unaware of the severity of the diseases their children are being protected against.
What do you see behind the implications, whether they're philosophical or what it is, about parents not trusting their pediatrician or not trusting public health experts, but they'll trust Jenny McCarthy?
Right. So as late as the 1980s, we also had this sort of new component to the anti-vaccination feelings. There were several documentaries and movies and books that were published questioning the risk-benefit analysis of the pertussis vaccine. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of this sort of comes out of this time in the 1980s where we started to really question the expertise of our doctors. You know, we really used to sort of automatically defer to their expertise. And I think the self-help movement, and we could even point to the feminist health movement of the 1970s, really pushed us to question this automatic authority, which was great in many cases. But in this particular case, not so much.
Interesting. So what we're seeing then as a result of this are increasing rates of diseases that were once literally on the back shelf that we didn't have to think about.
Absolutely. A few years ago, of course, California had a really horrible pertussis outbreak where 9 infants died. And also we've been seeing little pockets of measles outbreaks in Texas and in California. So, and these are outbreaks that we haven't really been seeing lately. So it's a bit troubling.
And you are a mother as well as a historian. Mm-hmm. What do you say when you dialogue with parents who say, no, I'm not going to have my child vaccinated?
Well, I mean, as you probably know, it's a really contentious debate, right? And yes. You always want to respect people's opinions. I just try and present the facts. I tell them that I vaccinate my children. All of the physician friends that I have vaccinate their children. And I just really try and – I think this is why history is important. We try and stress this in the blog project Nursing Cleo, connecting sort of this – our collective historical memory to these present-day issues is vital in sort of giving us some perspective. We certainly don't want polio to reemerge as a disease in the United States. But also the measles, we often think of the measles as just a rash and a fever, but it can be very mm-hmm. debilitating. And I think that we have a short sort of memory about these things.
So what's the main lesson that parents in 2014 can learn from history when it comes to approaching vaccinations?
I would advise parents to just really consider, talk to their doctors and consider that side effects are very minimal. And we can't take for granted the protections that modern-day vaccines have brought us. And I really think that this is an opportunity for parents to really have an open dialogue with their physicians, with their family physicians.
Jackie Antonovich is a gender and medicine historian working on her PhD in history at the University of Michigan, and she's the executive editor of the collaborative blog project nursingcleo.org. Thanks for talking with us today, and glad you've recovered from your whooping cough.
Thank you very much. This is a pleasure.